commercial buildings. And then the rest of the site could have a ground floor residential component.
Okay, so is it specific in the MU3 that the residential unit would not be on the street, would not be on the front side?
Yeah, those are the proposed standards, but it would have residential on the primary street frontage.
Okay, that's.
The 36 units per acre sounds like a lot. Where did it come?
Sounds like a lot. That's what we approved with the place type. We'll also say that density somewhat gets towards a density that's not very achievable, and so it sort of allows developers to come in and fit what they can on the site.
So you say it's not achievable because of physical limitations, typically speaking?
Physical limitations, parking setbacks.
Gotcha.
Constructability, number of stories.
Got it. Because, yeah, we would have requirements, you know, like if it backs up to the residential, it'd be a setback on the second floor or the third floor or whatever. So, yeah, it just becomes it's a maximum allowable, not necessarily technically feasible.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
There was consideration at some point of requiring properties to develop out to their full potential so that you didn't have single-family places being developed in multifamily zoning, that kind of thing. Do we get into trouble by allowing at 36 units in density if that's really not going to be achievable on some of these lots?
No, it provides us an avenue for our EIR to be solid with our general plan and zoning code update. The state did require minimum density on a lot of our properties for a while. If they have that requirement again with our next housing element, it will not be to build at the minimum that we set. It would probably be to build a minimum of 20 units per acre, which is what this is zoned for already.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Okay, are we good? Okay.
I'm good.
I think we're good. Okay, then we are good. We are going to move on. Councilmembers Peek and Newsom, we're going to move on to the next item. We'll take a very, very short break here, about 3 minutes, to allow them to return. We will reconvene at 10:05.
Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess and will return in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL.
On April 19th, 1995, 2 years to the day following the U.S. government's botched raid on the Branch Davidian compound near Waco, Texas, a rented truck pulled to the curb in front of the nine-story Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building in downtown Oklahoma City. Inside the building, over 350 federal employees and visitors were beginning their workday.
With regard to this proceeding, basically,
in a building across the street, a meeting was being held by the Oklahoma City Water Resources Board. The meeting was being recorded. Then, at 9:04 a.m., came the explosion that would alter the American social and political landscape.
Basically, there are four elements that I have to receive information regarding. Everybody, let's get out of here. Now! Watch the electricity line! Watch the light! Watch the light!
Local radio and television stations rushed to the site, and the monstrous effects of the bombing were broadcast around the world.
My floor was okay, and the ceiling had come down, but there was still concrete above, so it was just a corner of the office that was left that we were in. Everybody else that we worked with is gone.
The building exploded into rubble. 167 people had been killed, 19 of them children, and hundreds were badly injured.
A blizzard of papers blowing out of offices that have been heavily damaged by this bomb in the downtown area. I'm just about 300 yards away from the front of this building that has been ripped off by this powerful blast. And yet buildings all around me here have suffered extensive damage. Up on top of the roof of one of these buildings, a brick wall has been blown over. And on this fourth floor of this parking garage, the elevator doors have been blown off the hinges. That was the force of this blast. Ross Simpson, Oklahoma City.
It was the worst terrorist attack ever on U.S. soil. And the terrorists were American. Just 90 minutes after the explosion, Oklahoma police arrested 27-year-old Timothy McVeigh, a veteran of the Gulf War, for driving without a license. Evidence soon linked McVeigh and his friend Terry Nichols with the bombing, which was planned as an act of revenge against the U.S. government for what had occurred 2 years before near Waco. Both men stood trial for their crimes. In June 1997, Timothy McVeigh was convicted of murder and sentenced to die by lethal injection. 6 months later, Terry Nichols was found guilty of involuntary manslaughter. He received a life sentence.
Tonight's city council meeting is in recess and will return in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL.
Welcome to Heroes of the Air. True stories of those who flew for America and earned the nation's supreme military award, the Congressional Medal of Honor. Heroes of the Air is brought to you by the Air Force Association, an independent nonprofit aerospace organization.
Is a requirement, and it ensures counties and cities update their hazardous mitigation plans every 5 years to stay eligible for FEMA funding and disaster mitigation funding. This is an update to an already approved multi-jurisdictional hazardous mitigation plan that the council adopted in 2021. It was developed through a coordinated effort that used current hazard information and engaged agencies and the community. This update went through a 2-year process of meetings and public workshops and has received state and federal approval pending this final council action. Atascadero was heavily involved in the regional meeting and completed several local spreadsheets to accurately update Atascadero's hazards and mitigation efforts. We did this through our disaster planning committees for several months. The HMP is very similar to the fire severity zones. The multi-jurisdictional one is very similar to the fire hazardous area severity zones. It has already been approved by the county and OES, and for Atascadero to adopt it will allow FEMA to issue a final approval letter for the plan. And then also included in this update is the Atascadero Annex. It's the local hazard mitigation plan that was worked on internally with the building department, planning department, police, and public works department. And we spent several months working on that and with the county. So what is the multi-jurisdictional hazard mitigation plan? So basically, the plan identifies the risk present in the community and outlines a corresponding mitigation strategy for each risk. It does not address the tactical steps required to carry out those strategies. And for an example here, so heat is an identified risk, and cooling shelters are the mitigation strategy. That's what the plan outlines, but that's where the plan stops. The actual deployment of the cooling shelter is the tactical action, and that occurs during an incident, not in the plan. So the tactical process of implementing the mitigation plan is done actually in the field. It's not part of the plan, the tactical part of it. So the plan identifies community vulnerabilities to local hazards, explains which people, places, and systems are most at risk from events like earthquakes, floods, fires, and other hazards. It recommends practical, cost-effective mitigation actions and outlines feasible projects and strategies that reduce risk without requiring excessive costs or resources. Aims to protect people and property and infrastructure long-term. It focuses on solutions that provide lasting safety benefits and strengthen in community over time. And then it helps FEMA recovery by pre-positioning the county for funding reimbursement and implementation of approved mitigation projects. So it makes FEMA's post-disaster funding easier to access and accelerates recovery because eligible projects are already identified and approved. So the main purpose of these plans are to get reimbursed FEMA money after post-disaster. So then here are some few significant changes to the multi-jurisdictional hazard plan. The update to meet new FEMA and California requirements with broader outreach. So it reflects at least the latest federal and state hazard mitigation mandates and includes expanded bilingual community engagement. And then expand hazarded profiles with improved maps and parcel level analysis. So it adds more detailed hazard categories, updated fire and flood maps, and finer scale vulnerability assessments. It modernized capability assessments and increased mitigation actions. So updated local plans, policies, and resources while expanding the mitigation action list to address current resilience priorities. And then refreshed development and exposure data for key hazards. So this incorporates new buildings, populations, wildfire, flood risks, data to improve understanding of community vulnerability. So then we move on to the annex, which is a lot smaller document. I think the county jurisdiction plan is 500 plus pages. Ours is quite shorter than that. So here are some significant changes to our specific annex. Expanded hazard analysis provides more precise risk understanding by incorporating new data on extreme heat, adverse weather, and parcel level GIS vulnerability, improving how hazards are mapped and modeled. Updated exposure matrix refreshes structure values, critical facility counts, and wildfire and flood exposure estimates, including dam inundation zones to reflect current conditions and better quantify potential loss. We brought in mitigation actions and capabilities, builds on past efforts with new initiatives like heat preparedness, urban forest management, and firewise participation, while strengthening regulatory and risk assessment tools. And finally, it strengthened implementation and alignment, ensures clear execution through post-disaster updates, improved funding pathways, and full consistency with current FEMA guidance and state safety requirements. So now we're moving on to the second portion of this, which is our community wildfire protection plan. With the process of approving the updates to the multi-jurisdictional plan and the annex, we're looking at the approval of the updates of our local CWPP. Again, this is a five-year update. It's generally the community wildfire protection plan in California is generally expected to be updated every 5 years to reflect changing wildfire risks, new developments, updated science and modeling, specifically like our fire hazard severity zones, and completed projects, and to maintain eligibility for state and federal grants. It's similar to the hazard mitigation plan updates. So basically this document also is needed for us to apply for state funding for fuel mitigation or defensible space, any kind of stuff like that. We're required to have CWPP to apply for those grants. The purpose of this provides a community-driven plan to identify wildfire risks, prioritize fuel reduction and mitigation projects, and guide actions and strengthen wildfire resilience by helping communities qualify for certain state, and federal wildfire mitigation funding. Again, this also just identifies the risk and the mitigation practices, but does not identify the tactics to help achieve that mitigation tactic. And then updated hazard, updated data and hazard mapping incorporates refreshed demographic housing data and adopts CAL FIRE's updated hazard severity zones, and it replaces the city's 2021 WUI map and aligning with Tascadero with the statewide hazard mapping. There's also some regulatory modernization. We changed the references to the 2025 California Building Code, fire and WUI codes to ensure alignment with the newest statewide construction and fire safety requirements. We expanded operational strategies, significantly strengthens fuel management, evacuation planning, interagency response coordination, including enhanced roadside clearances, broader treatment strategies, improved alertings, and formalizing a dedicated fuels crew for the future. And then we enhance community programs and ignition resistance, add structured home hardening assessments that we currently provide, stronger defensible space enforcement, expanding FireWise and contractor education efforts, and introduces a residential consultation program to provide tailored homeowner guidance on defensible space. So that brings us to our recommendation is to approve the 2025-2030 updates to the San Luis Obispo County Multi-Jurisdiction Hazardous Mitigation Plan. That is a mouthful. Accompanying Atascadero's Annex, Annex B, and the Community Wildfire Protection Plan. And now I'm open to any discussion or questions.
Okay, thank you. I will start on my left to see if there's any questions. Councilmember Pete? Nope. Mayor Pro Tem Daris?
Just one question on the fiscal impact of $250,000, roughly. What is it that imposes that cost?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear
the $250,000. It's the fiscal impact is 250, and it's 75%. I know it's covered by federal grants, but I don't understand what. How is it?
So the county hired a consulting group to do this, and that's okay. And it was a 2-year process. We had public meetings, public outreach. So that was the total cost of it. Okay. And then back in 2023, I believe all the annex cities came incorporated with the city, and they split that cost by that percentage that was in there.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That's all.
You bet. Yep.
Okay. Councilmember Funk.
And wake up. Okay. Thank you. And I want to thank Mr. Van Zone for the extensive discussion in advance. These are dry documents, but they're also really important that we're regularly evaluating and taking seriously the threats to our community and how we plan to address them. So just a couple of things I want to follow up on with that. One of them is on page 191, anybody wants to look it up, there's a mention of wildfire evacuation routes being considered for road improvements. Do we know if that, and this might be Mr. DeBar as well, do we know if that includes the exit to Highway 41 that a lot of residents have asked for? There's an area that has no second exit that could, if it could, has a surface crossing over the creek into 41, if that's sort of on the
list
of things
being looked at. Yeah, I would defer that to Public Works Director DeBar.
I'm happy to report that they do have a second access out, and it's through when the Three Bridges Oak Preserve trailhead was built in that parking lot. There's actually city right-of-way that goes out, and they actually can get through that fire lane that's usually gated, so they can get out that way during an emergency. Okay. And one of the long-term projects that Phil really wants to because I know he uses that area a lot, is with Carmelita, extending that section of Carmelita up to that that area there. So,
and if residents were really keen on having that kind of an improvement that wasn't necessarily in the community's plan, could they, you know, form a community facilities district or do something like that to achieve those kind of improvements?
You know, I guess. I mean, they could come together much like Amapoa, as we were mentioning the other day. And, you know, I know there's that. We used to have a local road repair program that I think it was Santa Lucia Bank, you know, back in the day used to, you know, work with us on. And I know staff has been speaking with Riviera Bank about it, and they've shown some interest in getting that going. So I know there was just a email earlier this week that I think Lorelei tickled, you know, Director Rangel and I with. So we're looking at that as well.
Okay, great. Are there any city facilities that haven't been earthquake ready, any critical city facilities that have not been earthquake ready retrofit?
The best of my knowledge, I think we are 100%. I know there was one building that was still needing some retrofitting, but I do believe that one's been accomplished. So I believe they've all been retrofitted to the earthquake standards.
Great. When does the you made it clear, this is the planning phase for recognize assessing and planning for preventing damage or mitigating risk. When do we have a discussion of the evacuation and immediate response to disaster? That, you know, we should also be updating those plans on a regular basis. Is that going to come to council anytime soon?
So evacuation is actually, that would be in our world considered a tactic, right? So it's depending on the situation. So we do have a developed plan. It's not a plan per se, but we've split the city into four different quadrants. And then if the fire is burning in one specific quadrant, we have a plan already written out that we could hand to Public Works, hand to PD, and say, these are the roads that we need to close. This is how many barricades we need. That's already all established. But having specific evacuation routes, we can't pre-plan that, because you have to base those routes on what the activity is doing. So it's a more of a tactic. We have the plan established on kind of like a mitigation of what we will do for an evacuation. But the tactic of actually doing the evacuation is going to be specifically at the incident or the EOC. And we have resources already developed and how that plan's going to work out. We already have that all worked out.
Okay. Regarding the roadside vegetation clearance, one of the challenges that the fire department has is being able to, you know, it's hard to inspect all of those roads. Have we considered, you know, or could we consider doing some kind of cooperative relationship with waste management, since they're driving vehicles slightly larger than the ladder truck through on all of our evacuation routes on a regular basis?
We could definitely touch base with them and see what roads that they have access. Obviously, if they're having access problems, then we won't be taking the ladder trucks in those areas, but our other engines might have access problems as well.
And they actually, in their current agreement with us for their exclusive garbage collection, they are mandated to do a certain amount of tree trimming work each year, and it's in the value of about $20,000 a year. And they have been doing that. Doesn't get very far because we have a lot of encroaching vegetation in the right of way.
Okay. One of the things that's in the plan is improving the evacuation alert system as sort of the 5-year objective. And we saw in the Llano fire that the current system, to my mind, left a lot of people wondering what was going on. because the county site, official site, was way behind the action.
Right, and that's going to be ongoing. That's currently in the plan, so it's ongoing review of how the system works, and that's a perfect example of the Llano fire that the system didn't work as it should have, with communication efforts and dispatch telling one way, and we had three different communication routes going different directions. So that's why it's in the plan, so we could still review that process and streamline it. But the county does run our evacuation now. They went to their own program through that, through their, out there's so many different websites that you have to go to. I can't specifically remember the exact one they have.
Yeah.
But, and that's got to be on us too, as an education purpose. We did send out a flyer last fire season that has all that information for the public. So more public education on how to reinforce the evacuation process and go through sign up through the Ready Slow website. That's where you're getting all the information. So we'll have to do a better job on communicating that out to the public.
Yeah, and would we be allowed to tell people that the Watch Duty app has a lot faster information than anything else?
Yeah, and actually it's a pretty good app, and that is true that they'll get information out before that we even call it on the radio. It's amazing how they do that. But we can do a recommendation of people utilizing that Watch Duty app.
Okay, thank you very much.
I have no questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's see if we have any public comment. Let's see if we have public comment first. Any public comment? Okay, no public comment. Bring it back to council. Since this, we're actually asked to adopt the draft resolution approving both the countywide and the Tascadero annex. I had a couple of minor typos I think I could get together with you afterwards. It would not materially change anything. So with that, I think we're ready for a motion.
Move approval of the multi-jurisdictional plan and the Atascadero Annex and related documents with permission to staff to correct typographical and minor errors.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion by Councilmember Funk, a second by Mayor Pro Tem Darras. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Peak?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Darras?
Yes.
Mayor Ribeau?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
All right, thank you. That is our last agenda item. We'll move on to council announcements and committee reports. I'll start on my right with Councilmember Newsom.
I have nothing to report.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Funk.
Homeless Services Oversight Council had a multi-hour annual meeting at last week and did some larger planning and prioritization for the upcoming rounds of state funding, and continues, you know, we continue to weigh how to make the best use of a rapidly shrinking pool of dollars, but are also recognizing the results that show that the continued attention to implementing the 2022 countywide plan is paying off in terms of reductions in observed homelessness in our communities. And the Tascadero Basin Groundwater Sustainability Agency is going to be meeting shortly to go over the annual water report, which in this jurisdiction is generally good news.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem Darras.
I don't have anything to report.
Okay. Councilmember Peak.
We have finance committee joint with CSTOC tomorrow morning and look forward to that.
Okay, thank you. County mayors met last Friday at the new Pismo Beach Public Safety Centers. That was interesting because they are using the same same contractor we will be using. So it was interesting to see the completed product there. They did a lot. Of course, cost a lot more than ours too. So, I attended since the last meeting, IWMA Integrated Waste Management Authority meeting. We're working on relocating the Morro Bay household hazardous waste facility and completing one in San Miguel, and also had a Central Coast Community Energy meeting. And Atascadero in particular suffered from the CPUC's decision to really jack up with a charge that's called the PCIA. And so the board created a new rate for folks that are willing to forego their eligibility for certain programs, rebate programs for battery walls and things like that. And they can sign up for a lower rate that could be of interest to residents in Atascadero. So it was good that the board allowed that flexibility. And that's all I have. Does any member of council have any individual determination? Seeing none, other than a determination to get out of here. Okay, it's a good thing we can avoid the motion to go past 11. Then we're adjourned. Thank you all.
At this time, AM 1230 KPRL concludes this portion of the Atascadero City Council meeting, brought to you by Idler's Home. More of what you want for your home. Go to idlershome.com. We invite you to join us the second and fourth Tuesday of each month for the Atascadero City Council meeting. We now join our regularly scheduled programming. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230 KPRL, Paso Robles, Atascadero, and Templeton.
Efficiency tankless water heaters. Schedule now at ontimeplumbingpro.com or call Red's On Time Plumbing at 805-466-6188.
John Stafford Construction and Pest Control, locally owned and operated for over 20 years. Combination of construction, whether it's new construction, remodel, and concrete work, along with pest control, including termites and bird control, and more. Get it done the right way and on time. John Stafford Construction and Pest Control, the one call that does it all. Give John a call, 466-8667.
Attention all computer users. Tired of the hassle of transferring your data to a new computer? Knowledge Computers, your local computer repair experts, are here to help. With 17 years of experience, they know how important it is to keep your data safe and secure. That's why they offer a seamless data transfer service that will transfer your entire Windows operating system to a new computer. Call Knowledge